Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Anthony Timpson, as it says up there. I am the technical director for my sins for a number of companies, all technology companies, Wave Mobile, small MVNO, we'll get onto that in a minute, and Selexica, which actually makes a software-defined radio I think exquisite perhaps is the wrong word, but it's a very high-end software-defined radio. So much high-end, in fact, we recently managed to put the Osmo COM stack and GSM implementation through CE approval with it. So we've got filters and OXCOs and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm afraid this is going to be a bit of a death by PowerPoint. I stand up a lot. I do a lot of presentations. I very rarely use PowerPoint. I hate it. I normally use a whiteboard. But in this particular case, I've done a very benign, very dumbed down, wrong term maybe, but PowerPoint presentation to tell you what we've been doing. I apologize. It's not as technical as I perhaps would like it to have been, given the level of education and technological expertise in the room. So feel free to ask questions afterwards, but I'll quickly crash through what we've been doing over the last few years in Wave Mobile, how we've used Osmocom and other bits of kit, commercial and otherwise, to make our things work. So let's start off with where Wave Mobile came from. So UK is allegedly a mature mobile environment. Okay, 98% of the coverage is 98% of the population is allegedly covered. There's four networks, so you should be able to do basic telephony anywhere. You'd imagine, wouldn't you? You'd be wrong, though. It actually turns out that because of RAN sharing, there's effectively two sets of masts. So there's actually two networks spread across five or six frequencies. And there are places where there's actually no coverage at all because there's four networks on one mast because it happens to be fairly rural. So there ought to be a way to actually solve this problem. It's 2018, and as we've heard this morning from various people, actually, there's been technology around in the open source world, in the communities that are represented by the people here, to actually take commodity equipment and turn it into something quite useful. Commodity radio equipment, that is, which in the past would have been really restricted to the likes of Ericsson, Nokia, Motorola, and in terms of customers and engineers, tier one telcos. There's also recognition that there is actually a problem in the UK, and I think it was 3 years ago, maybe four now, a project was put together called the MIP, the Mobile Infrastructure Project, where they committed £150 million to solve the rural mobile coverage issue. They put up, I think, three base stations. I'm not quite sure how much of the £150 million they spent, but I would imagine it was a fairly large amount. The figures are out there somewhere. I lost interest. I was just more interested to know why the hell they couldn't do something with it. The concept of national roaming doesn't exist, so even were there a capability to do something on the radio side, you can't do it with the domestic solution. So we've got a customer. Let's just say it's a fire service based in a rural part of the country. And that customer basically has got volunteer firemen who go and work on the fire department for a number of days per month. They're on standby. The rest of the time, they're working in their farms, in their workshops, in the supermarkets, whatever it is that they do. Quite a lot of these people live in areas where there's no coverage. I mean, literally no coverage. So, okay, you could say, well, in a modern world, you've got Wi-Fi calling. You know, it's not a big deal. As soon as a guy gets on his tractor and goes into the valley, he doesn't have Wi-Fi calling. And you're out of the coverage zone again. And this customer basically said, you know, we need to find a way to have as close to 100% coverage as we can get in places where we need it. So, okay, thinking about it kind of logically, the natural solution is to offer a dedicated SIM with national roaming capabilities. You're not limited to one particular RAN share scheme that way, so you get the benefit of being on more than one tower potentially. But the problem is, no tier one operators offer it. Actually, very few tier two operators offer it. It costs a lot to operate, because generally, unless you want to become an MVNE and trust a third party to run it for you, you need to bring your own HLR in and your own infrastructure to go with it. Perhaps worse than that, there is no such thing, and there's a couple of people in this room who will know this, there's no such thing as a retail-priced interconnect agreement. You end up getting completely shafted. You end up paying 2.5 to 5 times what you'd pay in the retail market for the same byte of data or minutes of calls. Also, this doesn't help visitors. So if you happen to, you know, say, right, well, you know, I've got a pub in a valley. I want people to be able to make and receive calls in the car park. Well, unless they've got one of your SIMs, they wouldn't necessarily be able to do that. And of course, it still doesn't help in the place where there's no coverage at all. So about, I don't know, it's probably 3 years ago now, I thought, there's got to be a way to sort this out. It has to be doable. So I've got this organization, which is called Selectica. We make a software-defined radio. We already have LTE and UMTS on it. And we've just begun to port. I think we had got GSM running on it at that point as well. I thought, there's got to be a way we can actually take the infrastructure we already got for the SIM cards and see if we can actually open that up and make it work with our radios so that effectively we could do the minimum guest roaming, which is where effectively, as we've talked about this morning, there's no authentication, no MSISDN, but at least you open the network up and people can make calls. And at the best, we find a way to hook it up to the SS7 network and actually do proper roaming. This also coincided with me moving. I've just realized it must be much more than 3 years ago now. It just feels like it, because actually I moved about 5 years ago. It coincided with me moving, and I moved to a little place just here. And this here is a small town called London with its 12 million people. Now, if I tell you that I live inside the London Orbital Motorway, so the ring road that goes around London, I live inside it. If I go to my local railway station, which is a zoomed-in version up here, I can't make a phone call. I can't receive a phone call. I can't do anything. There is no coverage in a railway station inside the Greater London Orbital Road in the valley where I live. Okay, it's used by about, I don't know, 500 to 700 people a day, that station. There's 60 trains a day go through it, as we'll find out in a minute. So you think to yourself, ah, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way of doing this. I've got to be able to do something clever here. So it turns out there are 4 ingredients you need to be able to actually do something, become an MVNO, whether you're actually a fully qualified MVNO, whether you're a minor MVNO, whatever you are. If you want to actually transmit, take a phone on board, and provide service to it, you need fundamentally 4 things. First of all, you need a site. It turns out most people with little or no coverage are happy to host a solution because it inconveniences them not being able to use their phone. It's 2018, not 1997. Femtocell solutions don't work very well. They tend to work in the building. To be honest, if you live in an area that's got thick Victorian walls in your house, they don't even work from one room to the other. Neither does Wi-Fi, for that matter, but that's another story. So chimneys and rooftops are being readily offered, which is perfect, because that's the great place to put a small cell or antenna. The second thing you need, and perhaps the most controversial, is spectrum. In the UK, there's actually 3.2 meg at the top end of 1800. It's called the guard band, and it sits, or used to sit, between the Orange network and the decked handsets. And back in the days when decked handsets were fairly rudimentary things and didn't work very well and didn't have good filters on them, there was a concern that basically GSM would obliterate the decked handsets and vice versa. So the guard band was put in place. Again, it's 2018, technology's moved forward. We've got SAW filters now. We don't need to have that piece of bandwidth reserved anymore. So actually, it got auctioned. I think it was auctioned 10 years ago, and it went from, so 3.2 meg, it went to, I think, 10 or 12 people, and the lowest price was 75,000, and the maximum price was 1.5 million. So I was lucky enough to be able to secure access to that spectrum?
Nationally.
So just in the UK. Does include Scotland, though, at the moment. So I was able to do a commercial deal to get access to the spectrum, and that then unlocked a bunch of capabilities, because suddenly now I can actually turn on a 2-watt transmitter in the top end of 1800 and see what happens, completely legally. The third thing you need to do it properly is some connectivity or the other. It's great, you can have an island cell. If it can't talk anywhere, you've got no coverage still, really. You've just got the vague illusion of it. So bizarrely, in the UK, there is generally good ADSL. People who want to stream 50 Netflix instants will tell you the coverage of the internet coverage is rubbish. If you want to be able to make and receive 14 half-rate phone calls and do WhatsApp messaging, 5 megabits a second is fine. So given what I'm trying to do with it, that hits the mark. Again, some site owners are actually happy to give up some of their bandwidth, some of their 5 megabits, to allow you to host a site so that they can basically use the phone and appear to be in this century. In some cases, the sites are so remote that you actually need to use VSAT, or some of the testing we've done is with Thuraya. So we have to be mindful there are different use cases and different backhaul connectivity cases. We have also developed an intelligent VPN. So effectively, because we're going to be ultimately transmitting ONL type data, such as configuration, heartbeats, and temperature monitoring. On top of that, we've got ABIS and possibly S1 if we've got LTE as well. If you shove all that down a regular line, it can consume a fair amount of data. So we've actually got a VPN product that does it strips the headers off, does some packet coalescing and optimization, and then chucks them back on at the other end. And it also forms part of our O&M platform as well, so it takes the GPS feeds and position things on maps as well. So that's 3 or 4 sorted. And last but not least, the most important thing of all, if you actually want to bring up a network, is to have some equipment that transmits and something at the back end for it to talk to. So your options are, or our options were, Sysmo BTS. We had a plethora of IP access rugby balls floating around at one point, and we got our own SDR. Ideally, whatever we put on the seat of the chimney stack wants to be small, power efficient, quiet, and preferably upgradable, actually, which we'll get to later. Core network of some kind, well, I'll get to that as well. We do have that from what I described before, but I'll tell you that in a bit more detail shortly. So I decided, right, the valley that I showed you earlier, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do an initial implementation, guest roaming, so no authentication, no map at back end, just base station, hello, here's a temporary MSI SDN, make your call, off you go. 2 sites, no handover. And ADSL connected. So as I said, no incoming calls, no SMS, blah, blah, blah. We use a Celexica SDR running a 2013 version of Osmo BTS. I'm pretty sure it was around that time. It was, it wasn't recommended by Harold and the team that we use this particular version, but we managed to hack it to make it work on our SDR. So for a long time, we stuck with it. And to be fair, it did work. We had Osmo BSC on board as well, and we bought A back to our MSC. We didn't have roaming, so simple guest HLR capability, and we'd already got a Quarter softcore, which is a non-open source product, but it's a pretty good lightweight core network, and it was what we were using for our HLR and our SIM offering, so it made sense just to bolt it into that, as it already had an MSC and supported the interface. Well, it sort of supported the IP access variant of the interface. It also gave us a migration path for LTE as well, because we do have LTE on the same SDR. So there is the base station pointing down the valley. So the railway line goes through there, and the valley is kind of, you can't really see it from here, but it's kind of going through there. So we've taken the unit, stuck it in a metal box, stuck an antenna on the front of it, and away we go. Because you're all a bunch of engineers, and I know that the question will be, I wonder what's inside, here's a nice picture of what's inside. So here's your headlines, 2 times 34 dBm, 2.5 watts, band 3 duplex, GPS disciplined with IXCO, Osmo BTS running on board. And it's based on our 5020 card. So you've got a Zynq 7045 FPGA and dual ARM core processor there. You've got an OXO for ultimate frequency stability. You've got two PAs. You've got SAW resonators to keep it in band, or so we thought when we designed it. Catalina ADI front end and GPS for position and additional discipline, clock resetting, etc. If I tell you that this board couldn't get through CE approval, it was a bit of a disaster. We made a few layout mistakes on it, but it was a first spin. However, it did work, and being in the guard band, there's less compliance required compared to a conventional within normal broadcast band or normal cellular band masks. You have to be able to fit certain GSM type masks, but you're not actually limited to GSM, again, which we'll get to in a minute. So, first year. This is actually quite staggering. So there's two sites. There's the one on top of the hill I just showed you, and one actually at the station. So, because of the fact there is no coverage, the handsets, after a period of time, will go into cell selection mode. Normally, they sit in cell reselection mode, and they will only lock onto their own network, their home network or their roaming network. There's lists advertised by the network that tell the phones what the alternate channel candidates are, and they will robustly stick to them. They will not go and look anywhere else unless they go into the tunnel effect, which effectively is no coverage whatsoever, or you rock up at a new country and the cells that were there are no longer there, so it has to do a rescan. So these are all phones that had tunnel effect. For the first year, we had over 300,000 location updates, which is quite an astounding number for 1 watt's worth of cells. We had over 2,000 calls. I didn't actually break out what the attempts were versus the actual completions, but it was a high percentage. Over 3,000 SMS attempts, which we had to reject because we didn't know the MSISDN to send them from. And lots of PDP context activation requests because a lot of GSM handsets don't really honor the protocol stack very well. If you say PS not supported, a lot of them go, yeah, I'm still going to do a PDP context activation request. I'm still going to do a DTM request so that I've still got my dual transfer mode, even though you never told me you had transfer in the first place. So there's lots of things that happen that shouldn't happen, which you learn about along the way. And when I get to my list at the end, some of the things we discovered ended up needing to be patched by these guys to effectively stop either the switch crashing or the base station going in some kind of wayward direction. Headline, 60 trains a day stop at the station. There's over 500 repeat visitors, and we have one emergency call. So at one point, someone dialed 112, send, and we had to deal with it. That actually highlighted a problem, and the problem is that the police then called me back and said, you called? No, I'm in Amsterdam, I never called. Okay, well, someone called from your number. No, my phone's with me. It's been with me all day. Yeah, you are 01883, blah, 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 blah. Ah, no, okay. So someone's called 999 from one of these two sites. Okay, who was it? I don't know, I can't get their MSISDN. So you can imagine it starts to get a bit complicated, and at that point, for the first time, suddenly you're in the, oh, I could potentially be causing a threat to life problem by not properly supporting MSISDN handling. So the good deed, because it is a good deed if you've given that many people the right to call, ability to call a cab and say, come and pick me up from the station, it's raining, rather than walking up the hill, has got a downside, and the downside is, okay, I need to kind of be a little bit more professional about how we deal with the call handling. So I set up a kind of objective list Number one, provide users own MSISDN on system. So that could either be done through registration. So you register with us, we send you an SMS, you enter the code. Once we've completed the loop, and that doesn't need map, by the way, you can do that entirely separately of map. Once we complete the loop, then we go, okay, you can send a call from your own MSISDN, but it's not, again, it's not really very elegant. You know, 300,000 people aren't going to register for the 1 minute a day they spend on our base station going through that station. The 500 might, but again, you have to be a bit proactive with it. Whatever happens, given that we don't have national roaming, we need to make sure there's no roaming charges. Okay, you can't have a situation where someone turns up at the station and suddenly gets billed £2.50 a minute to receive a call. Okay, that would be in no time. The regulators would be very unhappy. So we need to do something to handle incoming calls in a kind of elegant way. We want to do two-way SMS, and we want to offer GPRS. Okay, so let's make it a little bit more funky. Let's give people the ability to use WhatsApp or Messenger, not YouTube, not Facebook, just something where they can actually communicate. So really, this is about basic communication. Okay, I want to roll a couple more sites out in the valley, so I actually cover the valley from one end to the other, which I wasn't doing with the first two sites. I want to add handover, because if you're going to give someone coverage and they leave the station and walk to their house, which is half a mile away, and have to close the call and re-establish it, it's kind of a bit naff, really, isn't it? So handover needed doing. And I wanted to think about a migration plan for evolved data, because at the end of the day, we've got 3.2 mega spectrum, and we're using 200 kilohertz of it. So we can kind of be a bit smart with what we do here. There was a bunch of testing that took place. Here we have a very nice Thuraya terminal there. We've got a nice power supply being solar powered, a little SDR there doing the GSM cell. And effectively, we run that up for a couple of days and just ran data over it to see how well the system would work over Thuraya using Thuraya's backhaul. And it worked pretty well. And we came to some conclusions from it as well. The conclusions were, for GSM, if the backhaul link is very low latency, it's preferable to use ABIS over IP. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why, but listed up there. Better control logical resources and handover granularity, ability to measure the uplink and downlink and see if there's interference on the channel and act an alarm on it. Better real-time slot management with a complementary RAN technology. I'll get to that in a minute. But if it's high, I think I might have put that on the wrong slide. Not wrong slide. That should be down there. Sorry, I wrote this at 4 o'clock this morning. For GSM, if the backhaul is high latency, it's preferable to use A over IP and co-locate the BSC and the BTS. And actually, if it's in any way unreliable, you need to put the BSC and the PCU inside the base station itself. So having considered all this stuff, we come up with a hybrid optimization. So we use A over IP across the network. That means the VPN, not the cellular network. That means there's less critical packets flying around. If you lose the odd AE packet, it's not really the end of the world. It sorts itself out, the timers deal with it. If you lose the odd ABIS packet, you can get in a right mess. Generally more stable on potentially contended backhaul where you've got some elasticity on latency. And actually, as our CN supports legacy IP access, SCCP Lite versus 3GPP AOP, we were needed to get Osmocom to revive SCCP Lite and bring it kind of up to date with the rest of the developments. We co-locate the Osmo BSC and the BTS. Allows us to implement in-stream optimization. So by that, I mean we might decide, actually, we'll just locally echo the heartbeat rather than sending it out and come back, that kind of thing. We can use the VPN itself to validate the link is alive without necessarily having to send an additional packet of data to verify it. If we implement the Osmo BSC and the BTS, then we need Sysmocom to implement the inter-BSC handover, which has recently just been completed, I'm pleased to say. We can also use local daemons in the BTS to monitor logical resources and handover requirements, and we can do the measurements actually inside the base station itself, but just use a different interface for it, whether it's almost tailing an error file or a log file, or whether we just packet sniff and see what's going on. Or, of course, we can implement additional hooks in the stack itself. We also, for phase two, needed to do some optimizations and upgrades on the core network. So first of all, whatever is needed, and those of you that have dealt with SS7 and MAP will know that interconnect agreements, global titles, point codes, all that fun stuff needed to be done, and we made some additional commercial arrangements to allow us to do that. We need to check it works, and we need to make sure that we don't generate any rogue billing, because again, people aren't going to be happy if they start getting bills. We also need to implement an engine to intercept MSRNs and instantly terminate mobile terminated traffic. So I'm not doing this to make money, okay? I'm doing this at the moment. It's almost become a point of principle. And I just want to see how far I can keep pushing it before someone notices. It's relatively inexpensive to operate a mobile network which does outgoing calls, because there's such great wholesale rates now. You can buy for reasonably small amounts of money for the amount of minutes I'm talking about. It's almost peppercorn. So outgoing calls, block all countries where stuff costs a lot of money and just allow people to make national, international calls within Europe. Okay, it's 30 quid a month. I think I can afford that. However, on the incoming call side, I don't have any control over it. I can locally offload the outgoing call. I can locally offload the data. I can't locally offload a call that comes to me from the original carrier. So the simple solution is, unless people say, I don't care, I'm prepared to pay £2.50 a minute, the simple solution is just to bounce the call and send them an SMS saying you were called by this number. Very simple, works a treat. Doesn't cost them anything to call the person back, so people are generally happy. To get the data side working, we need to stand up GGSN and SGSN. Now, we have got those features within the existing core network product, the Quartus soft core, but to be honest, we found there was quite a lot of interoperability issues, which may have been caused by the fact we weren't top of trunk. We were actually running this very old version of the stack. So initially decided, actually, let's try and bring everything back up to date. So we put Osmo SGSN and Osmo GGSN. In fact, Harold and the team actually set all that up for us. I just provided a box, VPN credentials, and they set it up. We tested it, took it live on the network. Traffic started flowing immediately. It was very, very simple and very successful and very quick. Basically, if you get through the CS location update procedure, then you automatically are honored the ability to go on the PS. We don't bother doing any further authentication if we use the Osmo SGSN GGSN. Having said that, we now do have an interface where we can query our auth. So we could actually connect the two together and make it a little bit more secure and flexible in its own right. So we turned all that on. And the last thing. This is kind of a very interesting minor topic, slightly off the side, but you guys support IPv6 user plane traffic, and we don't have it on our existing core network. So that was another driver for it. That driver was bought by a potential customer who is a large network operator. And that large network operator had a requirement for an M2M GPRS base station running IPv6. And they didn't have the ability to roll out such a device anymore because they stopped actually buying GSM equipment 2 years ago. So in this particular case, I was approached as a potential solution provider. Can you find a problem or a way of solving this problem? And initially, I didn't have the IPv6 support, but once we got that, we were actually able to solve it, and it's still ongoing, and we may end up actually getting a nice little contract out of it at some point. But interesting how the world is saying 2G is disappearing, and there are still tier one operators struggling to find solutions that are heavily reliant on 2G. So I'm not quite sure it's disappearing in all countries as quickly as people think it is. In fact, I'd say that GPRS and GSM are here for certainly the next 10 to 15 years. I don't feel quite the same about UMTS, but we'll see. So, bought that all that equipment back up and running. It's all there. Now, after the second year, so adding everything together, so this isn't just the second year breakout, so 750,000 location updates, 7,000 calls, 5,000 SMS attempts, 100,000 PDP context activations, and I actually don't know how much data was put through, but it's 20s, 30s, 50s of gigabytes, bearing in mind the fact it's on GPRS, so that's, you know, not exactly fast. Two emergency calls, which were able to be fully processed this time, which was good. And considering this is a bit of a hobby project, an uptime of 98%, which is reasonably good, all things considered. I think the cleaner unplugging the base station at the station was one of the reasons that we had some downtime. And our interconnect provider had a SFP fail higher up in their network, and we were out for 8 or 9 hours. That was another cause for a failure. So generally, pretty good. So now we're into phase three. This is where we are now, actually. Location and network expansion. So we've got a second village online now. It's currently a 2-site network. It's going to be another 4-site network. Doesn't have quite the same volume of traffic as we have where I am locally. But actually, what it does have is the interest of Parliament, because there's a local MP that lives there. So it's quite timely. I'm also going to start at some point a radio advertising campaign to get people to tell us where their hotspots are. Because the more I look around, the more I see. And I'm just kind of curious to know what critical mass is there to actually really start to create some attention with this. We need to productionize the BTS packaging for reasons that will become clear in a minute. But right now, our BTSs are in rain-resistant 3D printed enclosures. Why? Because they take 6 hours to print and they do the job, but it's not really a professional package. We have got challenges around heat removal, because FPGAs and RFICs running at the speeds we run them at, they get hot. So we have fans, and what we really need to do is find a solution that doesn't need a fan, but also isn't, I don't know, the size of that box over there. We want to also do full activation of inbound roaming for persistent users. So at the moment, it's very much on an ad hoc basis, whether we turn it on or off. We've got all the metrics now. So we could basically say, OK, if we get 4 periodic location updates within a 24-hour period, that's a persistent user. On-ramp them for inbound roaming with the mobile terminate block put on. They'll suddenly get coverage. They'll be happy. We might send them an SMS, tell them what we're doing, and give them the option to opt out, which I think we're legally required to do. But actually, we can start to use some of the technology with a bit of common sense. There's no point inbound roaming all the phones that come past on the train. You're just going to create a map nightmare and lots of unnecessary network activity. But for people who genuinely will use the system, who stand on the platform every day, who want to call a cab, it's quite a useful feature. And then finally, start to look at this thing called GILTI. So GILTI stands for GSM in LTE. It's not where I'm going to prison. Effectively, we've got 3.2 meg of spectrum, and there is a version of LTE that sits into 3 megahertz. So if we were able to do something really elegant with that, like put the GSM carrier inside the LTE carrier, then you kind of have the ability to do 8 to 10 megabits a second on a good day on LTE, and multiple voice calls on GSM, plus VoLTE, if you've got it, plus circuit switch fallback. So you're suddenly now making your small cell look a little bit more attractive, because actually you can use it for a few more things than an edge or a GPRS-based WhatsApp message. So actually, we've tested this. It works. It works really well, actually. Surprisingly well, in fact. The very basic iteration of it, we simply carve a slot out of the resource blocks on the LTE cell, position the GSM in the middle of it, and occasionally you might get a little bit of noise on the GSM uplink channel because the LTE handsets harking on the same physical time domain slot as the GSM carriers on, but it's rare, and with decent power control, you don't really notice it. The audio concealment takes care of it. But actually, we can go one stage further than that, because what we can do in the time domain is we can actually, if we're really smart, synchronize the LTE resource grid with the GSM C0 start point, and then actually do a time grid where effectively, if we're not using the GSM channels, we can bring all the LTE slots up and just leave C0 there and C1, also C0 and time slot 1. And then as the other slots fill up, then we just don't use the LTE resource blocks on those particular areas in the time domain. And we can schedule the uplink, obviously, not to transmit and stamp all over the GSM carriers that are active. So quite a nice little additional feature there, and makes very, very good use of the guard band, actually. So I guess I could honestly say that most of this wouldn't have been possible without SysmaCon being involved. And that's what we're really here today, is to talk about all the work that's been done, not just in the GSM systems and the base stations, but actually all the support and the advice and the testing and all the other bits and pieces moving forward. I mean, specifically for us, apart from being a good sounding board, because the team are, there's been a bunch of things we've actually needed to have working in order to actually make our hardware work as well as it could do, and also to facilitate some of the ideas which I come up with, which quite often don't work and quite often do work, but that's how we ended up with that guilty thing. So ideas are good, but you need a flexible team of people to work with you to actually allow you to implement them. And in particular, things like SI2 Quad, so that gives us the LTE hand up into BSE handover. I can't believe I'm the only person that ever asked for that, but anyway, we've got it now. IPv6 support, maintaining the SGSN and GGSN when someone screwed it up, and that someone may have been me. And then I need some help. I'm on a plane. I can't really sort it out at the moment. 3G to MNC, which I believe was fixed, but we were using such an old build at the time that I needed it to be hacked in is the wrong word. Patched in is probably better. And various other bits and pieces you can see there. And actually, last one is PySim upgrades to support programming our valid USIMs. I bought 5,000 SIMs from a tier 2 operator who went bust. I wasn't going to throw them away. I paid £5,000 for them. So effectively, by using PySim and getting some modifications done to the code, we can pop them in, they reprogram, we can use them still. So the SysmaCon guys and everyone who works on the OSMACOM stack and associated projects have been really, really good. And I'd just like to say thank you while I'm standing up here as a customer. I know we support you financially, but it's still good to actually say thank you to the team as well. Finally, everyone likes some pictures. So here's the new version, the 3D printed version of the base station currently in use today. As you can see, we've upgraded the antenna now. This is a really good alpha antenna. It actually costs more than the base station, I think. And then there's another alpha antenna. That's actually going on the village hall in the second village that I was talking about. That's got 6 dBi of gain on it. It's a good cross-polarized antenna, that. Couple of things also that are worth mentioning. So because we've got guard band, we don't have a huge amount of power. We've done some quite smart things with, well, at least we think they're smart. You might not agree, actually. This is probably the right forum to find out, with the radio path. So because that board I showed you earlier effectively is a dual path board, it can do 2TX, 2RX. On GSM, we actually transmit the same stream on antenna 1 and antenna 2, and we transmit the same stream 45 degrees offset on the antenna. So effectively, it's double the power, but 45 degrees offset. So we think that, in fact, we know, we've tested it, that gives us an extra 3 dB of great gain on the ground and what it doesn't make up for in the near field. By the time the signal's bounced around, we get it at a distance. We also do the same on the receive side, and we implemented maximal ratio combining inside the PHY. So effectively, we don't even do diversity anymore. We actually take both signals and combine them up to get the best quality on the uplink as well. Again, some of that wouldn't have necessarily been obvious to us unless we had good support to understand how the stack needed the signal when we were writing the channel decoders and encoders. So again, very good support from you guys. Finally, predicted coverage map. So, all right, this might be a very opportune site on top of a hill, but that's a 2-watt site, and we were just doing a little model to see how far we could actually get with it. I think that's about 7 kilometers. So it's pretty indicative of, with the right conditions, right site, what a difference you can make. And incidentally, that is one of the locations that doesn't have coverage in some of the areas around there. So that's my presentation. I apologize it wasn't super technical. In fact, it wasn't technical at all. But I'm happy to take any questions. I will do my best to answer them if I may, or if I can. Please fire away.
Okay, yeah, first of all, thanks for your great presentation.
I think I just realized I don't think I breathed for that entire 20 minutes.
Also, let me say thanks for the support in terms of financial support to the project. I think considering the scale or the size of your network and your deployment and the amount of contribution you give to the Osmocom project by funding development at Sysmocom, it's quite the highest proportion of support considering the number of sites you have deployed. So it's
might not be at the end of next year.
yeah, sure, but so far at least. So thank you very much for that. Questions?
This kind of goes in the same direction. Much of the talk sounds like a hobby project or maybe charity, but I know, of course, because I've implemented many of the features that were on your list, that you've actually funded Sysmocom and paid my wages. And so I'm kind of wondering, how does this connect to business? How is this charity? Do you get a grant, or are you a company behind the scenes?
There is a company. So Wave Mobile is a limited company in the UK. I think, to be honest, most of this is just my stubborn nature. I'm fortunate enough to be in a reasonably comfortable position where I can look strategically at certain technology developments. And actually, GSM is really bizarre because, you know, I should be investing my money in blockchain or something. But actually, I think the fundamental need to communicate is very important. I think we've got a world now where it's expected. And it's not economically viable for tier one operators to put equipment down to cover every centimetre of a country. It's not economically viable. We just have to be honest about it. I'm taking the approach that if a bit of upfront investment now, first of all, it benefits everybody who uses the stack and the platform, and that's not a bad thing, okay? Because ultimately, it may end up being in time one of the few GSM stacks and commodity base stations you can actually purchase or buy or use that still has enthusiastic people maintaining it. But secondly, beyond that, if we roll this out to enough places, eventually someone's going to go, hang on a minute, what they're doing is really good there. We should either buy them up, or we should actually see what we can do to go into partnership with them and roll it out over a much, much larger area. It's just really, you know, it's one of those things. If someone doesn't do this, it will probably never happen until eventually the government says, right, you either do it or we're going to pull your licenses. Or someone like me comes along and says, actually, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to nail the flag to the mast and see what happens.
So this is entirely you putting up a mast, or is the community approaching you and giving you something
upfront? Bit of both. I have been up the ladder and put the mast up, personally. I have got some guys who work with me to do it as well. I don't do it all. And I have got a network engineer that works with me to keep the network up and running as well. So it's a bit more than just me driving around in my car with a pole on the base station. Having said that, it's one of those things where that we are now reaching a point where people are getting interested and they're approaching us. And that's really that's where you want to be. You want to be at a point where you're not chasing down people for opportunities, people are chasing you down for solutions. And it's starting to reach that point. And you know, I think that will be the point where it actually starts to pivot and we look at how we can get some kind of government funding for it, because I think in due course that will happen. But it'll only happen if somebody goes somewhere that had no coverage, or had before not have any coverage, turn their phone on, make a call, and go, oh, wow, okay, yeah, it works. It's no good doing some half-baked solution that sort of works, or a, you know, even my 3D printed base stations on top of the village hall work very well. If I turn up with a bag of wires like my Thuraya experiment outside, that doesn't really attract commercial interest because people think of it as being incomplete. If you actually put something on the side of a building, a bit of infrastructure, and they can use their phone where they couldn't use their phone before, and they're no longer inconvenienced, and they're a person that has some influence, suddenly it's like, okay, someone's actually solved this who isn't Vodafone, O2, EE, or 3. And that's kind of where I see us fitting in, ultimately. The guardband spectrum was made available. We're actually using it. By the way, I could be completely wrong about all this, so but it's just a gut feeling.
So on the slide about phase two, there's been MSRN for mobile terminated traffic. What's MSRN?
The MSRN is the inbound roaming number. So when you're roaming, someone calls your home for your normal MSISDN, a SRI for MSRN goes out to the roaming network. The roaming network offers you a local phone number, and effectively the home gateway MSC then calls or call forwards you to the local phone number, which then sets up the paging request, which then connects the call. Or in my case, doesn't. It gets the number busy and we send the SMS forward.
Okay. Do you also handle lawful interception for this network?
No. No, and it is something that has come up. That's when we get into phase three, that's something we need to take a bit more seriously. We are on the database of mobile network operators in the UK, and the agencies do know of our network and where it is set up and know what to do if they receive a call from it and they want further data. So we're not set up for LI. What we would actually do in an LI situation, so we keep signaling traces because that's fairly routine for most networks these days for a period of time. But we don't hold any consumer data, any customer data. We only allocate SIMs that are B2B, not person to person or retail SIMs. But if an LI query came in, we were told, you know, this number needs to go on lawful intercept, the easy way for us to deal with it is actually to blacklist the IMSI, make it somebody else's problem.
Yeah, but you also use a core network, an MSC from another supplier, which
yes.
is able to.
Possibly, but to be fair, at the moment there's three of us actually, that are in the company. When you start looking at needing proper LI, PCAP traces, and all the other bits and pieces as well, you need to generally have a data officer who isn't part-time, who's full-time. You need to have all the bells and whistles. It becomes more of a commercial nightmare. So if we get to 500 sites, yeah, hell, we'll have an LI department, but with 5 sites, 10 sites, 2 locations, it's far easier just to say, yeah, we can give you the traces and we can tell you when it hits our network, but we won't provide service. Therefore, go back to EE and get the lawful intercept there.
I was wondering if you could tell us more about this Selexion thing. This is the SDR that you turned into a functioning base station?
Yeah, it's a Selexica SDR, so it's... There you go. Yeah, so it's a, like I say, it's kind of the Rolls Royce of SDRs, what we think it is. So it's got our own PHY for GSM, a channel encoder, channel decoder. It's got our own stack and PHY for LTE and UMTS. I wouldn't call it a typical carrier grade cell. It's been designed for, I think really, if anything, testing and femtocell type markets. Originally it was derived from a femtocell stack that we acquired. 4G stack we built in-house, 4G5 we built in-house. The actual hardware reference design is ours as well. And you can go to selexica.net and you can see the products on the website if you're interested. I'm happy to give you more information offline as well.
So a couple of things. I was wondering, with the GPRS data, did you implement any kind of restrictions on it, or and how did that work out in terms of people flooding the GPRS capacity? So just the other question also is, I'm wondering about the VPN that you mentioned that you had optimized for with packet header. Yep. Is that open source or?
No, that's closed source as well. Well, that the VPN we actually designed from scratch. It wasn't, I don't even think there's any derivation from anything gleaned from OpenVPN. I think it was actually done completely from scratch. But we had a particular mindset for it, and that was effectively, if there's multiple signal paths, i.e. more than one SIM card, let's say you have a two or three different paths that want to connect into the VPN from the same endpoint, it optimizes that as well. So it does round-trip analysis, it does hot-cold link analysis and all that kind of stuff as well. So it can actually be a multi-path VPN or a single-path VPN, but in either case, it strips the headers back and optimizes the traffic between the two points.
But is it, is it going to remain a commercial product that's for sale, or do you have, given the amount of kind of, mentions of charity and stuff, and that you're doing a lot of things.
Oh God!
One way is obviously supporting Sysmocom.
The guy that wrote that will kill me.
Yeah. Okay. No. Don't answer that. It's all right.
Oh God! I've opened Pandora's box.
Sorry. One more last probably question. So could you explain which parts of Osmocom you actually use? Because you said the file layer is proprietary, but you also mentioned Osmoterics, right?
Yeah. So
what exactly is being used? Which stack?
We're using the stack. We're using the, so I think it's Osmo BTS TRX is what we were using, or maybe are still using, which is the UDP packet-based interface into the PHY. So everything really from PHY upwards is Osmocom on the base station. And for the GPRS on our network, we actually use Osmo SGSN and Osmo GGSN in our server rack. And Osmo PCU. Yeah, absolutely. Everything up was in the stack. Sorry. Yeah, so we use BSC, PCU, SGSN, GGSN. Not the MSC part. And actually, mainly, that's down to the fact we had an incumbent one that already had the map connectivity. So it just made it much more straightforward just to plug it in and work.
If you look at Osmo BTS down, then so you basically mimic the Osmoterics UDP interface, and that's how it works?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So we have our own channel encoders and decoders, and as I said, we use MRC for optimizing the uplink.
Yeah, because the reason I'm asking is because I don't remember seeing any other implementation, so you either forked something and I didn't see it, or you just mimic something which exists, so you just mimic Osmoterics, and that's why you're using Osmo BTS TRX.
Yeah.
So I think we have now the coffee break.
Great, thanks everybody. Yeah. Good questions.